Folks, Field of Greens is the healthiest thing I do every day, and I want you on this journey with me. Why? It's literally one scoop a day. It tastes great. I love the fruit flavors particularly, and it's completely improved my life and my health. This is nutrition the way nature intended. When I began taking a hard look at why I wasn't feeling good and why I felt unhealthy, why I was gaining weight, why I was losing energy, it wasn't just because I had hit my 50s. No, it was because I wasn't getting the right amount of fruit and vegetables in my diet. And listen, I'm just too busy to go to the store, clean up the vegetables, cook vegetable dinners, and make sure I hit the fruit. A Field of Greens stepped in. One scoop of powder in my drink or on my eggs in the morning, and boom, I was off and feeling better. And suddenly, I was losing weight. I was sleeping better. My metabolism went up. My blood sugar went down. My cholesterol went down, and my weight went down. And my doctor said, hey, whatever you're doing, keep it doing. You know what that is? It's Field of Greens. That's what I've been doing. Field of Greens is radically different. Each organic fruit and vegetable was medically chosen to support heart and vital organ health. I trust Field of Greens to keep me healthy. I promise you, you're going to love this product. But if for any reason you don't, they'll give you 100% money back guarantee. Now, you're going to get 15% off your first order, plus free rush shipping because of the incredible partnership we have here at Just the News with Brick House Nutrition, and of course, Field of Greens. All you got to do to take advantage of this offer, visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JustNews. That's promo code JustNews at fieldofgreens.com. Don't wait. Go to fieldofgreens.com today. Use the promo code JustNews for 15% off. Hello, American. Happy Thursday. If Thursday feels like Wednesday and Wednesday felt like Tuesday, it's because the same show keeps playing out on the floor of the U.S. House. We still don't have a U.S. Speaker. Kevin McCarthy still is losing the same 20 or so votes every vote. We're headed to vote 10 on Thursday afternoon. Think about that. 10 votes, and Republicans have not yet picked a speaker. We're going to turn in just a second to my great colleague, Nick Balassi, who's on the floor of the House. He's going to give us the very latest. But first, let me tell you who's coming on the show. We've got two great guests. We keep talking about how conservatives and Republicans have lost the mantle of fiscal conservatism. Well, one of the Jiminy Crickets of the fiscal conservative movement, our good friend Grover Norquist from Americans for Tax Reform, is going to be on the show. We're going to talk about how Republicans have lost it, where they're regaining it. There are some really exciting things going on in the states, like getting rid of income taxes. We're going to talk about how that's happening even as Washington continues to spend like a group of drunken sailors. So Grover Norquist will get us started. And then later, a name you may have heard during the election last year, Hung Cao. He ran for a House seat in Northern Virginia, nearly won a blue district. He's a military veteran. He's doing lots of great things. He's also one of the great strategic thinkers on military and security issues. He's going to talk to us about all the things going on, started with the major loss of recruitment in our military armed services that began when Joe Biden took over. This is a big crisis. We're going to be tens of thousands of troops short next year of recruitment goals. That puts our national security at risk. And then there are these other issues with military readiness. Hung Cao is studying this for the Polaris Security Group, for CACI, two of the biggest and most important voices in national security. He's going to join us in the back end of the show. But as I promised, let's go back to our good friend, our great colleague, Nick Balassi. He's on the floor of the House right now where Kevin McCarthy keeps losing the exact same vote by the same margins. Nick, tell us how it's going out there.
Yeah, you know, it's just replaying over and over again. We're heading into the 10th ballot now. There it looks like there was some support among McCarthy allies to at least try to get a motion to adjourn before heading into the 10th ballot, but it looks like they're going to head into the 10th ballot very soon, as soon as we get the official tally from the 9th. So we're in the same situation, like you said at the top of the show, John. I mean, you have about 20 conservatives of the House Freedom Caucus, and they aren't budging. At this point, I saw a statement from Matt Gaetz and other House Freedom Caucus members saying, at this point, there's nothing really McCarthy can offer. They have decided they're going to oppose him, and this could just keep replaying on and on again until we figure out what the breakthrough is, or if there's a consensus candidate that can get the whole caucus in line. Time will tell.
That's the delay here, right? They don't have a consensus candidate yet, do they?
It doesn't look like it, no. I mean, there was some chatter about maybe Scalise stepping in if this doesn't work out. There was also talk before the speaker election even began about Lee Zeldin, who's not seeking the chairmanship of the RNC. Maybe he could be a backup candidate. Anything, I guess, is on the table right now. As you've, anyone who's been watching the floor can see, there, the conservative members are kind of floating different names. We have Byron Donalds up there. We even had Matt Gaetz recommend Donald Trump as House Speaker. Now, we know Trump wants McCarthy, but for the readers and viewers who may not know, the Speaker of the House doesn't actually have to be a member.
That's right. He can be on the outside.
Yeah, so maybe looking outside is something that needs to be considered. Actually, Brian Fitzpatrick, congressman from Pennsylvania, was saying if McCarthy keeps failing over and over again, he's a supporter of McCarthy. But if he keeps failing over and over again, maybe they will have to look outside of the House, because he doesn't think anyone in the caucus would even be able to get the support of a simple majority to elect the speaker.
It's amazing. Well, it's a drama that looks like it's going to go on maybe for the whole week, maybe into next week. And that is a remarkable thing. And, you know, the Democrats don't have anything to worry about. They can let this play out. They seem to enjoy it. I think yesterday, Kat Kamick made a kind of a sardonic remark saying they brought the popcorn, blankets, and alcohol. They love this. But the truth of the matter is, because Mitch McConnell cut that deal, they've got all the spending they need. The government's not in danger. They can spend until the September 30th deadline. So Democrats are sitting pretty. They can just let this play out. Republicans are going to be the party that has to resolve this. And it looks like it might need some outside intervention, not only with an outside candidate. It might need someone like a Donald Trump or a Newt Gingrich to come in and say, hey, guys, we got to stop this. We got to break the logjam. Something has to give. Any sense that McCarthy's going to withdraw his name?
Wow. I mean, that would be a huge development. McCarthy's been positioning himself for this for a long time. But it's possible. I mean, how long are they going to let this play out? As you mentioned, John, I mean, the headlines are all over saying chaos in the Republican Party. And the Democrats are sitting there voting consistently for Hakeem Jeffries every time, 212 votes. And they're just sitting back saying, this is the party that, you know, can't get it together. And I think heading into, you know, just looking forward, whoever becomes the speaker of this Republican conference has a difficult task ahead of them to get those conservative members in line with the rest of the caucus on any issue, you name it. It might be a difficult time for any speaker heading into this. So we will see.
There's a new name that popped up on the ballot for the first time. So most of the last 2 days, it's been Byron Donalds from Florida as the alternative, and he's fared well. But Matt Gaetz just threw in Oklahoma Republican Kevin Hearn, another one of the big conservatives. Any surprise there?
Yeah, I think someone like Hearn is a candidate who obviously the Freedom Caucus members support. But going forward as a consensus candidate, I don't see him being the one, the breakthrough candidate that can get this all together. But you never know. I mean, something has to be done. As we talked about on the show yesterday, John, concessions were the main thing, right? What was McCarthy going to give in on? Apparently, he's put a lot on the table. I heard from sources ahead of it.
And hasn't moved a single vote?
Yeah, it hasn't moved anything. He offered various things in terms of apparently seats for two Freedom Caucus members on the Rules Committee. He talked about the amendments process, allowing members, regardless of what committee they sit on, to be able to offer amendments, which hasn't been done in a long time on the House floor. That hasn't been enough. And there's even involvement of a super PAC he supports, saying they won't intervene in Republican primaries going forward to, you know, undermine any hard right candidates. That's been a concern of the House Freedom Caucus for a long time. But apparently, no matter what he's offering, people like Congressman Gaetz, they're not moving. They see McCarthy as an establishment figure. They want somebody fresh who can redo everything, it sounds like, mainly the makeup of the House and the way it runs and the way these spending bills in particular are put together and move through the chamber.
I think the last 24 hours took off the table the notion that there's a negotiated settlement between McCarthy and the rebels, because after a significant amount of concessions, not all of the ones at the 21, but there's a lot in there, there hasn't been a single person that moved their vote. They've shifted around and, you know, voted for other people, but it's still the same 2021. And that seems to be sending a message to Kevin McCarthy that these 20 will just not accept Kevin McCarthy. So McCarthy has some options, right? He could try to get a bunch of Democrats to vote present or Republicans to vote present and see if he can lower the number. But this is a drama that seems to be stuck in one gear right now. Nick, as you look out and you've talked to a lot of these members, you've had some great interviews, you've caught some great moments on the floor. What is the sentiment, particularly among the 200 that know who they want for speaker? Right? They want McCarthy. They don't like these other 20 messing around. They seem to be getting a little testier.
They do. They seem to be because they want, you know, an end to this. They want consensus. They want to be able to move forward because in the end, they won the majority and they're supposed to be holding the Biden administration accountable. We've heard a lot about all the oversight investigations that Congressman Comer wants to do. There's a lot they want to get started. And of course, the border is another one, the way the Biden administration is handling the border. I know they're going to dig into what's happening today. Apparently, the Biden administration is going to allow up to 30,000 migrants to apply from their home countries instead of having them show up at the border. Well, we all know a lot of people are still going to show up at the border, and they're going to do the 30,000 applicants from their home country. So it could flood the system even more, cause a larger log jam. I know the Republicans are going to want to get right on top of that and investigate it and find out how this could stop, because I know that's something they've been against for a long time. I'm not sure where this is going to end up, but I think those 200, they see, like Brian Fitzpatrick said, congressman from Pennsylvania, I think the outside of the House may be the only option to find somebody that could unite those 20 defectors who don't support McCarthy and rest of the caucus. I think that might be the only way forward, unless, like you said, John, he can lower the threshold, get more members to vote present. But I don't think he's going to get that from the Democrats. They've been in lockstep with Hakeem Jeffries every single vote, 212.
They've got their guy. They're set. They just have to figure out how long they want to sit here. I mean, the Democrats could help McCarthy win right now. They could foil this whole thing because 40 of them or 30 of them could simply vote present. And then McCarthy could win on a less than 218 majority vote. It may just be that the Democrats get so tired, they decide, I want to go home for the weekend, and they keep doing it. It's going to be very, very interesting to see where this plays out. It's hard to tell what Kevin McCarthy's endgame is, but I guess we'll find out at some point.
Yeah, we're going to stay on top of it, for sure.
Well, you're doing some great reporting. We appreciate it. We love having you at the top of the show. We get real news straight from the scene, which is a real blessing for all of us. Keep up the good work. We'll send you some coffee and Red Bull so we can keep you up at night, but thanks for the good work, my friend.
Thanks, John. It's great to be on again.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, Grover Norquist from Americans for Tax Reform, we're going to talk about the fiscal conservative identity of the Republican Party, what's right about it, what's wrong about it, what's at stake in this debate on the House floor. Right after this commercial message. Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000 or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews. Hey folks, as we approach another critical election, a wave of concern washes over America. Recent studies reveal that an astonishing 56% of our fellow citizens report feelings of anxiety or dread about the upcoming presidential election. That's why I stand with AMAC. AMAC is more than a senior discount organization. During these challenging times, they fight for common sense and hope that our nation returns to traditional American values. Visit amac.us/justnews today to seize an exclusive election year special, a 4-year AMAC membership for just
$30. That's right. You heard me right. 4 years for $30. As an AMAC member, you're not only enjoying money-saving benefits, but also the AMAC magazine, free Social Security and Medicare advice, a trusted voice in Washington, and a community of like-minded patriots who love this great nation. Take advantage of this election year special. 4 years for $30, and be part of the solution over the next 4 years. By becoming an AMAC member, you're strengthening a movement dedicated to preserving the principles we hold dear in this great country. Join now at amac.us/justnews. That's amac.us/justnews. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. As you know, we've been talking about the House speakership battle in a much larger conversation, that what's really going on in the Republican Party now is a fight for the heart and soul of whether it's going to still be a fiscal conservative party. The last 20 years, Republicans have been aiders and betters in some of the grossest expansion of spending in federal agencies that we've seen in our lifetime. 83% of the nation's debt has been accumulated since George W. Bush took office in 2001. Republicans have had control of one-third, two-thirds, or all of the town for 70% of that time. So Republicans are involved in it. And these 20 holdouts, yes, they're trying to get a lot more than this, but their real core concern is that fiscal conservatism has left the Republican Party. Well, our next guest, he has been the conscience, the Jiminy Cricket on the shoulder of nearly every fiscal conservative in the Republican Party for more than a quarter century. He's our good friend, Grover Norquist from Americans for Tax Reform. Grover, great to have you on the show today.
Absolutely. Good to be with you.
There was a moment in December when Mitch McConnell cuts the $1.7 trillion credit card for Democrats, gives them the entire budget for 2023, that I realized that maybe something bigger was going to spin off from that. It wouldn't just be the recriminations and insults for Mitch McConnell, but it might have hardened the backs of some people who are just tired of these constant backroom deal, leadership imposed monstrosity of spending bills. I know there's a lot of other dynamics going on in the House Speaker race, but talk a little bit about the fight for restoring fiscal conservatism in Republicans, because I think it's definitely one of the undercurrents driving some of these 20 players.
Yeah, when one talks about the Republican Party, it's always important. Democrats want to pick 10 Republicans who embarrass themselves regularly on television and say, that's the Republican Party, and that's not fair. And then some people go, oh, some of the Republicans have been around for a long time in the House and the Senate, who are a little too easygoing on spending, and that they represent the Republican Party. And here's the good news. Since 1994, which is the first year that 96% of all the Republicans in Washington signed the pledge never to raise taxes, this is the pledge that Americans for Tax Reform has shared with House, Senate members, candidates, presidents, now governors and state legislators. Since 1986, this was something I put together with the Americans for Tax Reform, was set up by Reagan and asked me to run it. And so we created the pledge saying, you know, if you stop raising taxes, there is a certain amount of debt that people can run up, but there is a limit to that too. And if you give them $100 billion in more taxes, they will spend that plus more. Every time you raise taxes, the debt has gone up because the spenders say, let's see, they just gave us 100. I bet we could get them to give us more. So they spend ahead of themselves. Whereas when you say no to tax increases, you actually do rein in spending at the state level, at the local level, and at the federal level, even with the capacity to run deficits. You still bring spending down from where it would be otherwise. And the Republicans have not faltered on that line in the sand. Taxes are not going up. And that is the beginning of the fight. Now, the second challenge is, until you have 60 votes and can beat a filibuster, you can't fix entitlements. That takes 60 votes. And the modern Democratic Party...
And that's a big ticket item, isn't it?
Yes. The modern Democratic Party is not willing to cut or reduce any spending except defense spending. And they certainly won't reduce entitlements. They sometimes talk about reforming them. In point of fact, when Clinton came in, all he did was increase welfare, not reform it. Only when the Republicans took the House and Senate did you get a reform in one program, aid to families with dependent children. So you've got this runaway spending cooked into the books. And if nothing happens, you don't have to pass any bills in order for spending to keep growing faster than we can afford because of the entitlement spending. So it takes dramatic reductions in spending, which you could do through reconciliation, and we were within one vote. I would say one thing about the Republicans. Under Trump, the House voted, they did this four times, the House voted to block grant Medicaid and Obamacare and some other welfare programs and say, we're just going to block grant to the states. It will not grow faster than inflation. And that alone saved a great deal of money going out into the future, because if you just slow the growth of some of these entitlements, they're all growing faster than your income, faster than your take-home pay, faster than inflation. So that's a real problem. We've got to bring that down. And we got enough Republicans to pass the House, and we were within one vote. We lost by one vote, John McCain's vote. We lost the reform of entitlements. If we can come back with a presidency in both houses and block grant the entitlements, this is not Social Security and Medicare, people pay in for those, but all the things that they don't, we can save trillions of dollars over the years to come and bring the national debt back down literally to zero just by reforming entitlements so that they don't grow faster than inflation. And you give them to the states. So the states, as we did with welfare under Clinton, when we block granted aid to families with dependent children welfare to the states, the average state saved 30%. And they kept that money in it to be able to do other things with. But Washington was paying less out than it used to. So that is the only escape from this treadmill we're on. Yes, you can cut domestic spending or military spending, one-time spending, but that's a very, it's worth doing. But it is a small piece of the problem. Not, if you do only that, you're nowhere. But if you do that plus reform entitlements, and I think the only way to do it is you can't rewrite entitlements out of Washington. You send them to 50 states and say, here's some money. You do homeless people stuff, okay? And some states will say, you got to be a citizen. Some states will say, we expect you to show up at 9 o'clock to work and do something if you're going to get anything as a homeless person, you know. And I think you'll find what works, what doesn't work. 50 experiments is the way to find out what would be better and what costs less. And then even the lazy states will begin to follow the more competent states.
And it's what our founding fathers intended. Federalism, states were going to be the labs of great ideas, not Washington. And so I want to get to that in a second, because there are some really exciting things going on in Republican states around this country. But I want to just talk about the brand for a second, the Reagan-Goldwater fiscal conservative brand, because most Americans I talk to don't associate Republicans any longer with fiscal conservatism, because they just keep seeing the spending deals. They hear the $1.7 trillion in December. They see the size of the Homeland Security Department created on George Bush's watch. They say, well, wait a second, you guys are complaining about that censorship that occurred at Homeland, but you created that department. You created that FBI. You allowed it to expand. How do Republicans reclaim the mantle of fiscal conservatism, not just in rhetoric, but in action? Because there's a brand gap now. The polling shows it. Everyday people, when I go out into the real world, go to Wisconsin, Michigan, like, Republicans are just as bad as Democrats when it comes to spending. How do they fix that dynamic?
Okay. The lazy way to fix it is to just stand still, don't do anything, and point to the outrages that the Democrats engage in. That, however, doesn't solve the problem very quickly, and with enough advertising, the left can cover that. Okay, and the establishment press also covers for the Democrats on that. So, being less horrific than the Democrats, is probably good for points in heaven, but it isn't going to win elections. It's not going to turn things around. One of the ideas that Republicans are talking about that I'm very excited about, Scalise has talked about it, is recreating the Anti-Appropriations Committee. This was the committee to combat unnecessary federal expenditures put in during World War II. And all this committee did, it was a bicameral commission, there were House and Senate guys on it, was they recommended budget cuts. And so that is how the Works Projects Administration was cut in half one year and then abolished the next. That's how the Civilian Conservation Corps, which today would have 3 million teenagers out, doing environmental stuff or something, if it still existed. You should take people out of the national parks and have them build stuff. and it'd be a huge works project or something. It was cut in half and disappeared during the first years of World War II. So this is a federal part of Congress, congressional committee, that existed in the past, saved about $40 billion today's dollars, and could be brought back, and I hope will be brought back by the Republicans, because then what would happen is every week on the nightly news, they would have to cover the Republican-led committee has just offered to cut these, and then they just voted for it, and the Democrats can vote for it or against it, and then you'll see a real distinction between the parties.
That's a real brilliant idea. And it's exactly the sort of fresh idea that Washington needs right now. And it's great to see that Steve Scalise has set that in motion. Real quickly, how does the Kevin McCarthy saga end? Do you think there's a deal he gets in? There's no deal and he gets out? Where does this end? Because obviously, every day spent on this is a day not spent on doing the business that American people sent the Republicans to do in the House.
Yeah. First of all, there are 200 Republicans who say we're perfectly happy with
90%.
And there's 20 guys, a little less than 10%, who have different arguments. Okay. And I would separate them out. There's some that just don't like him personally. One complained that he didn't call him to congratulate him when he won his primary soon enough. And he hates him and says, I'm never voting for him. Well, I'm not sure you can fix that. But then there's some others who go, well, I have this thing that I'd like, but I can't pass it through the Congress. I don't have other Republicans supporting it. I mean, any of the things that people are demanding of Kevin McCarthy are things that 50% of the Congress could do, right? They could say, I want that. So they're asking for things that they haven't done the work to convince their fellow members that they're important. So my objection is not, I think some of the things that they're asking for is very good. One guarantee of a vote on term limits and a guarantee of a vote on each appropriations bill has to be voted on separately, not in one big package. I think those are great ideas, okay? But why weren't they out? I never got a call from any congressman saying, could you endorse this package? Could you do a letter? Could you speak to I want to talk to the Wednesday meeting and tell everybody about this project I've got. They sit in their room and they talk to four members that are their friends. They think it's a great idea. And then when they toss it out as an idea and not everybody goes, we plan to drop everything else we're doing to do your project, they get mad. And then they say, but I bet we could twist somebody's arm when he needs five votes. So I'm not happy about the timing and the mechanism they're using. My preference is Jack Kemp. Jack Kemp, supply side economics, has cut the tax rates by a third, went member to member, went out to the Wall Street Journal and to those publications that would cover it. And he gave 1,000 speeches a year on the subject for a decade. And then he changed the world. He changed the world. But if he sat down with five other congressmen and said, let's wait until the Republican leadership needs our votes, and then we will scream and demand that you have to do X, which nobody's been prepared for. I'd much rather that people learn, congressmen and senators. Again, some of the things they want to do, I look at, that's great. Have you explained this to everybody? No, we're just bringing it up now. And people aren't willing to drop everything, like a scheduled election, in order to accommodate your list of things that you'd like to do that you never mentioned to them before. People have a feeling that once they've told people something once, that they must have heard it. You know, Ronald Reagan gave the same five speeches during his campaign again and again and again, because the audience is different each time. And until you hear somebody say something two or three times, you're not sure if they mean it or they really believe it, or this is just a project they were thinking of, but they're not really doing. So I would strongly recommend that anything that some of the 20 guys, the ones who aren't just voting at a peak, would like to see done, start talking to people about it. Do talk radio and not whining if the leadership hasn't done your project. You do your project. Make your project so exciting that someone will steal it from you and do it when you're not looking. That's called winning.
Yeah, no, it is. And one of the things that Republicans have done much more poorly in the last 10 years, and Democrats have done much better to a great extent, now they have the help of the mainstream media, is owning the narrative. In the 80s and 70s, 80s and 90s, Republicans owned talk radio, Fox News, direct mail, and they created the narrative. They owned the narrative, and that's why they won so often. Liberals have really owned the narrative of the last 7-8 years, certainly things like Russia collusion and demagoguing on so many issues. But Republicans have to learn the art of how you set and own a narrative and see a narrative through to it becomes action. And that's one of the great opportunities that this new Congress maybe can give us if it can ever get past this leadership battle. While Washington still has its gridlock and epitomized by the battle of McCarthy right now, there is some really extraordinary experiments going on in state. We've been lucky to have Kevin Stitt on the show and Kristi Noem and Ron DeSantis. And there are amazing governors doing amazing things. Glenn Youngkin is doing a lot of great things. I think our founding fathers always expected the best ideas would come from the states, not from Washington. What gets you excited in the states right now?
There are 8 states with no income tax. People know them, Florida, Texas, Tennessee. People are moving there. There are 8 states with a single rate tax, like, oddly enough, Pennsylvania and Illinois. And there are 5 states that in the last 2 years have voted to move to a single rate tax: Arizona, Idaho, Mississippi, Iowa, and Georgia. And there are 10 states that are in the process of moving their personal income tax to zero. Okay, so you have in the red states, every red state is cutting its income taxes except Alabama, but all the others are cutting their income taxes, or if they don't have an income tax, cutting some other tax. And North Carolina is a few years away from having zero income tax. New Hampshire will have zero income tax. They're getting rid of their tax on dividends and interest over the next 3 years. It's a 12-year march now for Kentucky to zero. Louisiana is on a 15-year phase down to zero. Mississippi is a third of the way through what they say will be a 10-year march to zero, 10, 12 years. Arizona's gone to 2.5%. They lost the governorship, but they're going to keep going from 2.5 down to zero. There's some very real Idaho's gone to flat rate tax. They haven't announced zero, but our friends up in North Dakota are committed to going to zero. The governor's a real hero up there. Burnham going to zero. Iowa, 8.6% top rate, down to 3.99 single rate over the next 4 years. And then the governor, the House and Senate say, we're then going to zero. So we're really looking. Wisconsin has almost two-thirds in both houses. They may be able to pass a phase down to zero over the Democrat governor's objections. They're so strong in the legislature and committed to going to zero. So we're seeing real competition take the income tax and other taxes down towards zero. And the blue states, California, New York, New Jersey, they had governors stop tax increases on the top rate, saying, guys, you legislators out there, you can't do this to me. People are leaving in droves. So when we've stopped the bleeding in some of the blue states on taxes because of the states with no income tax and low flat rate taxes and the states that are moving in that direction. School choice. The best one now is Arizona, which didn't have a statewide.
Nobody saw that coming. Yeah. It's a big experiment.
Any income level, you can get school choice, $6,000, $6,500 per child. Homeschoolers, Catholic school, Protestant school, non-religious school, private school, public school, the public school of your choice, homeschooling. All of this is available to you. They passed this for everybody who earns less than $80,000 in New Hampshire. Now they're going to take it up to twice that income level, so more people have access to it. Our friends in Iowa are looking to do this, and Virginia, almost all the people you mentioned, sit in Oklahoma. These are tremendous steps in the right direction and liberalizing things so that kids can get a better education. And governors, the next governor is going to be the Republican who moves to zero on the income tax and full school choice.
Pretty remarkable moment in federalism in action, states' rights in action. The big difference of the state, too, is one of the great things. When when a state cuts its income tax or eliminates its income tax, it reduces its spending and they live within their budget. There's very few states, obviously blue states are not that way, but red states live within their budget. In Washington, we've had some amazing tax cuts over the years, right? The Bush tax cuts, the Trump tax cuts, but spending has never gone down. And take entitlements off, because obviously entitlements is the big banana we got to do. How do Republicans start to get to that point? You mentioned the committee. I love that committee idea that Steve Scalise is trying to revive from the 40s. There's the Holman rule that Kevin McCarthy has committed to, which is voting the budgets away for recalcitrant bureaucrats or agencies that don't follow Congress's will. Do you think there's some other ideas? And is there a will now? Do you sense now that there is a will to start saying, enough of the spending, we're cutting it?
Well, the answer is there clearly is. Here is the challenge. We need to, I remember the conservative leaders had a press conference in mid-November, the year Reagan got elected, before he was in office, denouncing him as a sellout because he hadn't done everything yet. He wasn't in office yet. And there's a challenge because let's say the Republicans in the House can not only pick a speaker, but can agree to 218 votes together to negotiate against the president. Okay. Well, you're not going to get the budget you want. The goal is to get a budget much closer to the one that you want than the one Biden wants. But you're going to have to ask 218 people to vote for a budget that's icky, okay? Because the alternative is massively problematic as opposed to just too big. And we need to make sure that we stop laws and programs that become self-growing, self-contained, populated structures that just get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And in the Senate, we don't have the votes in the Senate to pass anything. We can filibuster. So we can pass something good, maybe, if the 218 get together. This is the trick. If you've got four people who said, it's not perfect, we don't want it, then you don't have 218. You have no power at all. Okay. And that happened to us the first couple of votes when we fought with Obama. You had a handful of Freedom Caucus guys, that zone, which said, well, this is not a perfect budget. No, it wasn't. And so they voted it down. Then the House played no role and the Senate came up with something. And the Senate and the president got together and they did it. And then the House was irrelevant. Then later the House did decide how they could get up to 218 for better, good things, but not perfect things. And that's when we took $2 trillion out of what Obama planned to spend in the next 10 years. But it took the discipline of saying, getting $2 trillion out is not everything I want. And you know what we had to trade for that was the higher debt ceiling. But we did get the $2 trillion in less spending. That was real. That changed the world. Can we do singles and doubles, not everything being a home run? And can we hold our nose and vote for okay or bad but not evil, and recognize that if you stop the bleeding and don't create new programs, a little bit of wasted money, as awful as that is, may be a small price to pay for permanent reforms. During Obama, they wanted to raise, we gave him $80 billion in spending because he wanted it for defense and some other stuff, in return for which we got $3 trillion in net present value reductions in Medicare way out into the future. And some of the people were complaining about the $80 billion, said, wait a minute, we traded $80 billion in one-time spending for permanent reductions worth $3 trillion net present value if you had given them all today. That's the kind of deal that we're going to have to be able to make and explain to voters, that you actually just dramatically reduced the debt and spending of the United States.
Grover, there's two numbers I always keep an eye on. I always keep an eye on the national debt because it is something we should all be concerned about. It's closing in on $32 trillion. But there's another one because it started right when I came to Washington in the early 90s. Just remind us, how many politicians have signed the Taxpayer Protection Pledge over those, 29, 30 years now?
About 90% of all the Republicans have signed the pledge never to raise taxes and kept it. The good news is since 94, when the Republicans won control of the House and Senate, no tax increases passed if the Republicans had either the House or the Senate. So either one has been able to stop any tax increase at all. Now, when the government was House, Senate, Democrat control of Congress and the president under Clinton, he raised taxes. House, Senate, Democrat under Obama, he raised taxes. House, Senate under Biden, he raised taxes. And each of them lost control of Congress after the next election. So, but the D's, given power, will raise taxes, but that is the only time the taxes can be raised is when the Democrats control everything, which is why step one is elect Republicans. Step two is talk to them regularly and remind them to focus on spending restraint.
It is truly remarkable. I was on the site a couple of days ago. 43 of the Senate Republicans, 180 of the House Republicans, 188 of the House Republicans, 16 Republican governors currently in office. These are people that actually hold the power. They've all signed that pledge. That's a pretty impressive record. There's very few people that have achieved that. It's always a fun thing to keep an eye on. Grover, it is a great honor to have you on the show. You always bring wisdom and common sense in an era of insanity in this great town. I really enjoy having you on today.
Thank you so very much, John.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back after these messages.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
All right, folks, welcome back for the commercial break. Last fall, I got to see this man in action. He was running for Congress in my home district in Northern Virginia, and he made an impassioned argument for all the principles that conservatives stand for. And he really had a vision, not only for economic security, but for national security. He joins me right now. His name is Hung Cao. Hung, great to have you on the show.
John, what an honor. Thank you so much.
It's my honor. I really enjoyed your campaign for Congress, and you were running in a blue district, came so close. But yeah, I think you drove in so many different ways a dialogue that so many Americans believe hasn't been had in this country about what's going on with our security. We're taking it for granted. We're eroding it through woke policies and through excessive spending. And I saw so many heads in Prince William County and elsewhere nodding when you would talk and when you would speak and when you give speeches. And I want to ask you a little bit. You served in the military. You have this extraordinary grasp of what's going on in the military. Many people are worried about recruitment and what's going on there. Tell us the real story of why military recruitment is down so much right now.
Well, I think it's all the wokeism that's going on in military, the ideologies that they're pushing. I mean, you got to understand that the military is not a social justice experiment. This is a lethal machine, right, that's designed to deter our enemies. And if we can't deter them, then we need to defeat them, pretty bluntly. And right now, the Army last year fell 25% short of its recruiting goals, which is 15,000, less than that they needed to recruit last year. But the Navy barely made it. And the way they made it is they brought in the delayed entry program. So people that would come in after October 1st, because the military fiscal year goes from October to October, they brought in all those people early, which is going to cause a problem now, right? I mean, it's almost like pay now or pay later. Well, they just took it for the 22 just to make the numbers, but now we're going to be hurting in 2023.
With recruitment and with some of the focus that we've seen on woke policies, we're more worried about pronouns and maybe the military readiness. There's been some real warning signs in some of the armed services about military readiness. Tell us a little bit as you study this and dig into some of the issues that you do as a senior advisor at Polaris National Security. What are some of the red flags you see in the preparedness military readiness of our troops right now?
Well, first of all, when you have a secretary of, but you have the chairman joint chief staff who wears makeup, you know, and he's worried about, white rage or whatever it is. And we have ships in the Pacific, the USS McCain and the USS Fitzgerald, who had major collisions. And then we had a near collision in the just in San Diego alone between USS Momsen and USS Harper's Ferry. That's indicative of a military that's not prepared to get underway, to deploy. I mean, we had accidents with Marines, you know, killed a bunch of Marines with an amphibious assault vehicle that flipped over. You know, we need to get back to basics. We need to train these young men and women to fight, not to look at pronouns.
Yeah, there's no doubt. You served in the Navy. You know the men and women that join and fight on our behalf and keep us safe so that we don't have to lay awake at night worrying about our security. The vaccine mandate seemed to have a really significant impact, particularly when the military simply didn't acknowledge some of the religious objections and other legitimate concerns that people had. How has that played out, not only in recruitment, but in the people who are serving and in those who we had this terrible brain drain because they got kicked out of their service? What's been going on with that, hon?
So I have very close friends who got kicked out because of the vaccine mandate. I had a young man who was one of my sailors. He came up, he was like the top deep sea diver in the Navy. And he, you know, he did a lot of what's called saturation diving. That's going beyond, depths that, you know, bone crushing depths, you know, like, you're using 2% oxygen. Yeah. 2% oxygen and 98% helium going down 1,000 feet. And he's getting, you know, so he came to me, he was promoted to chief petty officer. And then I got him commissioned into as an officer. He served brilliantly and he refused a vaccine mandate. So what they do is they sideline him from jobs that he wants to do. So he's forced to really retire because there's no upward mobility for him. And what they did is, well, you know, since you didn't serve 10 years as an officer, you're going to revert back to enlisted. But because he was not a chief petty officer in E7 for 3 years, he had to revert back to E6. And, you know, it's just, so now he went from O3 to E6. And then I also had another classmate from the Naval Academy who was the top commodore, so the commander of a air wing in the East Coast. And, you know, he had COVID. And so he has natural immunity. They drew his blood and they tested his immunity against his flight surgeon who was vaccinated and boosted. And he had twice the amount of immunity that his flight surgeon had, but they still kicked him out. And so in a time, like I said, when we're short of military personnel, they're kicking out good people. There's 8 people, 8 midshipmen at the Naval Academy right now whose careers are hanging on the balance because they don't want to get the vaccine. And so as a young person coming into the military, why would I want to go into a military that would turn their back so quickly on my core values, which is God?
I've heard so many of these stories over the last year and they're mind-numbing. And meanwhile, a military short of people and skills are losing it for a reason that doesn't make much sense to, I think, most Americans. It's pretty incredible. With all of the unusual things we've imposed in the military, the woke agenda, the pronouns, the vaccine mandates, there was this incredible moment in the summer where a movie from Hollywood celebrated not all the wokeism in military, but what military does best. Top Gun Maverick just took off. And I wonder, have you seen an impact? I've heard you say that the original Top Gun movie inspired you. Do you think that this movie gives parents a chance and an opportunity to share why you should consider public service, military service, and has it done some good for the services in spite of their own silliness?
Absolutely. So, you know, just like in the 60s, we had shows like Lost in Space and Star Trek to invigorate the youth to science and technology for the space program. In the 80s, we had Top Gun. And, you know, with Top Gun 2, you know, it really invigorate, you know, that toxic masculinity that the left likes to talk about. That's what drives us, right? I mean, that's what we want our military men and women to be. We want them to be meat eaters, not a bunch of leaf eaters.
Yeah, exactly right. And that was an amazing movie. And people, I think, just got inspired and reminded of how great our military is. I remember in the 1990s as a young reporter covering a lot of the China fundraising scandal that plagued the Clinton administration and the loss of some of our nuclear designs to China. We know our enemies are constantly out there trying to steal our designs and our innovation because they're not as smart and good or innovative as we are. There's been a really concerning set of reports recently that a large number of American parts have been found in some of the Iranian drones that are being used to attack our allies in Ukraine. How concerning is it, and what mitigation strategies do we have to make sure that enemies like Iran don't get our parts going forward?
No, you're right. We need to ensure that our supply chain security is up to snuff. I mean, how can they allow an Iranian shell company to buy all of our technology? But really, let's walk backwards here. How did they have the money to buy all that? Because 2 years ago, under the last administration, Iran was on the brink of economic downfall, and they couldn't afford all this. But when Joe Biden came in and he lifted all the sanctions and he eased all the pressure for them to not the Iranians not to build a nuclear program, it brought in billions of dollars that they're able to buy this our technology on the black market. And now the Iranian, with the nuclear deal that Biden wants to provide, the Iranian regime is going to get $1 trillion over 10 years. So that's a lot of, funding of terrorist acts and also, basically destroying Israel. That's what their goal has always been. And so it's very discerning that we allowed Iran to have this buying power to buy technology that's ours.
Yeah, such a great point. And we got to keep that. The linkage is so clear, and the potential concern and devastation that these Iranian drones are doing to our Ukrainian allies is pretty extraordinary. Let me finish, Hunk, because you spent a lot of time working on strategy in the big pictures. You have these extraordinary positions that really get the moment to think about how we make ourselves stronger. We're in the midst of an 8 or 9 month war now where we're watching Russia. It's a proxy war between us and Russia over Ukraine. We're funding it by the tune of billions of dollars. The Russian military has proven itself to be far less superior than I think we thought. But how do we get to an end game? Our president hasn't really defined victory for us, but what is the end game that we should try to get out of this? And how do we get to that end game quickly and safely?
Well, let's remember, first of all, that China and Russia are strong allies. I mean, when this all happened, before this all happened, Russia moved all of their troops out of the Chinese and Russian border all the way out west for them. And so anything that happens to Russia is also going to impact China as well, since they're a strong ally. So we've been able to defeat really the Russian military without putting boots on the ground in Ukraine. And we did that by sending them our weapons stockpiles, really stuff that's starting to age out. But and then the money that we're getting is now going to replenish some of our next generation weapons. And so that's the end goal, really, is if Ukraine loses in this deal, and this is why we don't rush to failure. If Ukraine doesn't loses, then there's no Ukraine left. But if Russia loses, all they do is they go back to where they were at the beginning of this, which is back to their own borders. And so there's really it's a lose win. So either way, if Ukraine loses, then there's no Ukraine left. And that's a non-starter. But if Russia loses, then all they are is they're going back to where they started. And so it's not really a total loss for them, except loss of face for Putin.
Would your advice be to any president, let's get the borders back to where they are, that Ukraine's made enough progress now that I think that's an objective goal? I think early on, President Biden, he was telling President Zelensky, bail out, I'll get your flight out of there. Zelensky and his soldiers have dug down and really proven that they could fight well. Now that they've got some momentum, the right thing is to get a peace deal that restores their territorial integrity, right?
Yes, they've gotten back 54% of what they lost. And so we just needed to, again, we don't want to go to an endless war, but we want to make sure that they get back to their borders and just maintain the status quo right now. It honestly, on a national defense side, it's allowed us to test a lot of our weaponry too. And so it's kind of a proving ground for us without losing American lives as well. I mean, my heart goes out for every Ukrainian soldier that's died on the battlefield, but, we have not sacrificed any American lives so far.
Yeah. And one of the great things in watching the Ukrainian people fight is you see the passion they have for freedom. And we sometimes take it for granted because our military has been so good with guys like you protecting us on the front lines. But when you see a people fighting for freedom and the stakes really are life and death, it is inspiring to know that freedom drives people to great heroism and to great accomplishment. And that's what I think the Ukrainian people have done for this entire world to remind us that liberty's worth fighting for. Hung, for all the work that you're doing at CACI, at Polaris, what's the best way for people to follow it? I love the work you do. I love the clarity of vision that you have for security. What's a good way for people to stay in touch with you?
Well, I think our Twitters are still going. Hung Cao for Virginia. Our Twitter feeders are still the Twitter and Instagram, I think, still going, as well as we're going to actually launch a super PAC pretty soon, because the idea for Virginia is we have to get back to the state Senate and the delegates in order for Governor Youngkin to make any headway. So we're launching a super PAC this month, and it's going to be called Unleash America. It's to find conservative elected officials who will limit government in order to allow for Virginia and for the United States to thrive. Right. We just need to get government out of the way and let the Americans thrive the way they know how, through innovation and really persistence. And that's what the American spirit is. And we talked about spirit earlier about, you know, the Ukrainian fighting spirit. Well, the American fighting spirit is even greater. Don't forget that we liberated the world twice in two world wars, you know, and when the wars ended, we beat those swords back into plowshares, and we rebuilt a country. And so this is the greatest country in the world, and we just need to let Americans be Americans.
Yeah, that's exactly what it needs to be. That's an amazing thing. Well, it's a great honor to have you on the show. I really enjoy the work you're doing. I can't wait to get you back on real soon. Huh?
Thank you, John. You have a wonderful day.
You as well. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back after these messages.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
All right, folks, that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News. So grateful you could join, so grateful that we could get that update in the middle of the show from our great reporter, Nick Ballasy, on the floor where Kevin McCarthy is headed toward defeat and his nomination effort to be Speaker. 10 votes, and Republicans have not yet picked a speaker. Now, one reminder, a lot of people say, hey, John, do you have an app at the Just the News? And the answer is, we sure do. And not only do we have an app, it's in the Apple Store. It's also in the Android Store. It allows you to take the Just the News experience and go in three different ways. You can watch our videos and television shows. You can listen to this podcast and many others like it, like Victor Davis Hanson, or you can read the stories that we do a day, 50, 60, 70 stories a day of the breaking news, investigative reporting, accountability reporting. Go to the iOS App Store or the Android Store today. Download the Just the News app. Read, watch, listen. Three great ways to experience the Just the News content and to join the Just the News family. And if you really want to get involved with the family and say, hey, I want to support your investigative reporting, John Solomon. I want to support the great reporters and the producers and the bookers and everybody that works to make the Just the News experience possible. You can do something really inexpensive that makes a big difference. All you got to do is join the Just the News VIP Club. That's right. What do you get for the VIP Club? First off, ad-free experience on the website and on your newsletters. No ads, no dancing videos, no autoplay videos. an ad-free experience on Just the News 24/7. Plus, once a month, you get to hang out with me at justthenews.com. We have a town hall. I sit and answer your questions for an hour. We talk about issues you care about. We cover topics that the other media aren't covering. It's an incredible experience to join the family, the immediate family of the Just the News team. Great opportunity. Sometimes we bring in our reporters. It's always a delightful time. If you want to get involved in that, go to justthenews.com/subscribe. justthenews.com/subscribe. Quick way to get into the club. It's $4.99 a month, $44.99 a year. Great way to support our journalism, make a difference, and get an enormous benefit yourself. So go check it out today. All right. Have a great night. God bless you. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition. John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News.
Hey there, it's Amanda Head, and I am thrilled to introduce to you my new exciting podcast, Furthermore with Amanda Head, broadcasting weekly from sunny Los Angeles, California, and brought to you by the dynamic Just the News Podcast Network. On this fresh and engaging podcast, I delve into the latest news with a little bit of a twist, exploring the furthermore of every story. But this isn't your typical run-of-the-mill news commentary or politically charged program. I interview a diverse range of guests, including business leaders, entertainers, musicians, educators, experts, politicians, and many influential figures from both the United States and around the world. So why not make your Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays a little more interesting? Tune in on your preferred podcast platform and discover Furthermore with Amanda Head on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. And don't forget to hit that follow or subscribe button and be sure to download the latest episodes. I can't wait to have you join me on this exciting journey.
At Just the News, we break the stories others in the media ignore or are too afraid to tell. We did it on Russia collusion, Hunter Biden, and the security and intelligence failures that preceded January 6th. Our stories have real impact and reach because we stick to the facts. I'm John Solomon. You can help me expand our honest, unvarnished, and unbiased reporting by becoming a premium member at Just the News. You'll get an ad-free experience and exclusive member-only access to events, and you'll be helping us dig up more truth. Join today at justthenews.com/subscribe.